are listening to Graphic Novel Explorers Club podcast, an audio book club. Greetings, explorers. I'm one of your hosts, Frances Preziosi, joined by
John P. Flores
and
Dennis.
Today, we are discussing Wrinkles by Paco Roca. We hope you have already read today's title because all three of us have read the book. So beware, spoilers ahead. Explorers can share their opinions and thoughts with us by leaving a comment on our Facebook page or over on Twitter and Instagram at GN Explorers Club. Graphic Novel Explorers Club is available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and wherever podcasts are available. So thank you guys for joining us today. We're going to go ahead and jump into this graphic novel, Wrinkles by Paco Roca.
Paco Roca.
Yeah.
You're not rolling your R's, lady.
I'm not.
Roca.
Yeah. The very opening of the book starts with is it a quote by Buddha?
I don't know.
It's a Buddhist saying.
It's probably a quote attributed to Buddha, how many people
were actually there to hear
it
to verify it?
So the statement reads, "The clouds do not disappear, they turn into rain."
Which is when he decided, I'm not going to be a meteorologist. I'm going to be a philosopher. Mm-hmm.
So the book starts, it looks like a young couple is in a bank applying for a loan, and they're not going to get this loan. The bank manager
Whoever's the loan processor is kind of being a jerk about it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, this is where I got really confused just right off the bat. I was like, they kind of look alike. Is this guy only do like one type of character drawing?
Oh, that's a good observation. Yeah, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, they look like the exact same person.
So the person applying for the loan and then loan processor.
And so then the next scene, you see the man start yelling at the older gentleman, "We're not at the bank. You're not a banker. How many times do I have to tell you this? Just eat your dinner." And then the banker is suddenly an old man in bed, and he's literally throwing his soup or porridge, whatever, at his son's face and just says, "Get out." So then we transition into...
which I thought was beautifully done. Like, it was such a shock. I was like, oh, okay. He's suffering from dementia.
Right. You get right off the bat, you get the implication that something's not mentally stable about the guy. Not that he's... you know, crazy. It's just that something is going on with
his dementia.
Mind.
I mean, it's beautifully illustrated.
So then it cuts forward to the young couple again is talking at some sort of facility, and the woman's explaining the cost to enrolling the father into their, I'm going to say convalescent hospital. They don't call it that, but that's basically what it is.
Yeah.
She's explaining how it's more affordable if he shares a room versus having his private room. And the son says, or the lady says, you know, "You can visit anytime. Your father have everything he'll need." And the son says, like, "Well, you see, we'll be very busy, so we're not going to be able to visit very often." And then it just cuts to the old man just kind of standing in the hallway with a suitcase all alone. And that right there pretty much broke my heart.
I know. It was so sad. You know, and I thought you hear about specifically more American culture is we don't care for our elderly family members. They just get put into these homes. And I thought maybe in Europe that it was different, but apparently it's not.
Yeah. And then it cuts to a flashback scene of him being a little kid.
Right.
And he's left in school for the first time and he's really scared and he wants his mom. And what looks like a very stern teacher or principal or maybe even his father is just glaring at him. And so he's all alone now, again in the hallway, but this gentleman comes up to him. And he starts meeting all these people in the hallway. I didn't want to go scene by scene, but if you guys want to.
Well, I think it's an introduction of the secondary main character is this guy who's kind of a rapscallion.
Miguel.
And Miguel's character, I feel, has the biggest character growth out of all these characters. But yeah, you're introduced to Miguel, who's kind of... he's kind of the McMurphy
of
this book. This book reminded me
a ton
of like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Absolutely. Although it's interesting the role reversal. So McMurphy is the
helper.
New guy coming in trying to kind of shake things up. Whereas Miguel is already established within
the system.
The system itself.
Yeah. Carry on. I got so lost with what you guys were saying.
We're introduced to the various characters. And it's
the main two characters in this story.
And it's an interesting parallel. I saw a lot, like you said, and we can go into it more between this and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. But it's interesting because, at least for, in this case.
Oh, that's what you guys were talking about.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm with you now.
Francis is already. We already have an application for her to run.
Dementia.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
I think it was established earlier too. This is his new roommate. He's going to show him the ropes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's kind of the shaker upper, and he's introducing him to kind of the crazy characters.
Well, and it seems like he like pawns money off of people.
He swindles them.
Yeah. He has the most mental capacity out of most of the characters that we're introduced to in the story. And so he kind of runs these scams of like, hey, someone with dementia will say, can I use the phone? And he'll be like, sure, it costs $5 to use it. So give me the $5 and then I'll tell him that you could go use it. Mm-hmm. Or, yeah, like, oh, is dinner ready? Yeah, I'll take you to the dining hall, but it's $5 to go to the dining hall.
And I'm sure in his head he probably rationalizes, look, these people are kind of out of their mind. They're not using their money. I can leverage that money for good, which he kind of does.
Well, and he also argues, too, like, I can keep them engaged.
Right.
It's not hurting them.
Yeah.
It's actually, instead of being dismissive or trying to correct them, he's allowing them to be where they are mentally.
He's visiting their fantasy world.
Yeah.
And kind of.
Which, there was a thing on NPR a year or two ago about this couple who work in improv in Chicago, like either Windy City or one of those improv groups, and his mom had been diagnosed with dementia, and it was a combative situation where he was trying to get her to do stuff, and then he realized he started improvising with her, and so he would just work the scene with her, like if it was an improv on stage, and it made her less angry. It would get her through the situation, the spell, until she got into the more present time.
So there's something that you just said I want to touch on, but before I do, I'll wrap up this scene. As he's kind of showing him around, he kind of talks about how like all people here, all there is to do is eat and sleep. And he's kind of taking him through like the rec room, and it's just like nature shows on TV. Mm-hmm. And the other guy says, no, I don't really like nature shows. He's like, no one does. And everyone's just kind of asleep. And you just kind of see it's very dreary. They meet this girl. She thinks she's on the train to Istanbul. Mm-hmm. And her scenery is very beautiful. As he's showing him around, there's the upstairs.
The second floor.
Second floor, thank you. And he's like, what is that? He's like, you know, the worst of the worst go up to the second floor. Mm-hmm. You never want to get there. Like, down here, you're still capable and you can take care of yourself.
Miguel's very negative about a lot of their living situations, whereas a lot of the other people are very like, hey, we have the sunroom.
Right.
Or we go and exercise in the evening. Like, they're much more engaged and optimistic about the end of their life, like what they, you know, they're finding the best in the situation.
Well, and in many ways, the problem for Miguel is that he has all his faculties. He's still mobile. He's still very alert. So to him, this is a prison. Whereas for other people, this is amazing. They can hang out with people of their age. They can play bingo. They can sit in the sunroom and relax and not have to worry about things. But for him, it's, I need to get out of here, which was very much like what McMurphy felt when he was stuck in the mental ward.
Yeah. And I wanted to say something in the beginning and I forgot. And thank you for reminding me. So my grandfather actually died of Alzheimer's, and he was 6'3" and owned a construction company. So he's a very big guy. My grandmother had in-home nursing for him. But unfortunately, due to the ongoing dementia, he became very violent. And he got physical, and my grandmother's a very short, petite woman, so you can imagine how scary it is to have somebody who's not rational coming at you. And he wasn't even that he was trying to be abusive. He was just trying to protect himself or defend himself.
Yeah, he's probably scared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So finally, as he started, really, his deterioration was very rapid. As he got worse and worse, she finally had to put him in the convalescent hospital. Mm-hmm. And he was not of sound mind at this point. Like, I mean, he was like, and I'll share some other references that come up throughout the book as we get to them as well, that were very accurate, in my opinion, this portrayal. So it was interesting for me to see it from the eyes of somebody who is still kind of lucid. They they haven't really hit rock bottom yet, and I hadn't thought about it from that perspective, what it must be like to kind of
be constantly confused and like, what's going on?
And to be put in this no man's land, if you will, having to figure things out.
Yeah, also to go back a little bit to the beginning and regarding the son and the family, I know it seems cold and heartless, and I know, Johnny, you talked about a little bit about our culture, American culture, and how it's a little different. But, you know, looking at his perspective as well, I felt...
Who, the son?
The son. I felt bad for him because it's hard. You know, we have a quality of life in our modern society where we're living much longer than before. So before, you could accept your relative, be in your home, live with you. I mean, I used to, you know, think of like everyone lived like the Willy Wonka family, you know, where everyone's just in one
four
house.
Four people in one
right.
bed.
But realistically, the cost, the mental toll, the emotional toll, it's a lot. And so, you know, the son, you know, it's not that he doesn't want to see his dad because he's cold-hearted and see you later, dude. I think in many ways, it's too painful for him to actually witness the deterioration. So even though it comes across as cold, it's the best solution. And yeah, I can't imagine being put in that position. And it's a weird thing where I kind of obsess over age a lot, even as a little kid. Nowadays, I'm in the position where I'm, you know, a caregiver sort of to my mom. I'm a parent now, so I'm a caregiver to young kids. I know my kids will have to go through it with me. And so it's like I can see all different perspectives for the different generations.
See, I'm
going to
be
sides.
The Miguel of the story.
You are. You probably are. Yeah. And you're going to steal my money and socks. I'm going, fuck you, Johnny.
Nope, you won't know because you're not going to remember. No, I get, it's clear the son is frustrated, not with his dad, but with his dad's illness. The frustration comes across of
right.
like, I can't handle this anymore. We need to have a professional helping you.
So then it cuts to like the dinner scene, if you will, I guess. Mm-hmm. And this is where he meets kind of like the core group of, I don't remember names. I do remember Modesto and his wife.
The names are kind of hard. So yeah, it's fine.
And then there's the girl in the green sweater. I think she wears the same sweater throughout the whole book. And yeah, he kind of gets to know them. And
and I really like the way the illustrator shows the difference between Miguel and Emilio. Emilio, the main character in the story, he's tall and skinny. Mm-hmm. Miguel is kind of chunkier and round, so it really is the two of us. Mm-hmm. but yeah, you're at the dinner table, you're introduced to a couple where he's very affected by the dementia he's suffering from this dementia that
he's not present at all.
Yeah, and his wife feeds him, and she's she's cognizant. She doesn't have dementia, Alzheimer's. You're just introduced to these characters. The other character in the green sweater, she gets around using a walker, and she comes into the story later when they actually escape from this facility.
I liked her a lot.
Yeah, she's real sweet.
And then at dinner time, they pass out the drugs. They hand out everybody what they need, and they act like Modesto's
like
wife.
Time?
Yeah, she's like, I know I want these. I want that. He's like, I can only give you what the doctor prescribed you. Like, so take that. So that was kind of funny. And
once again, going back to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, it's a good kind of comparison to where One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, you saw the staff as like this kind of villainous, oppressing.
I mean, it's completely different type of story.
Well,
yeah.
A different type of story and also a different type of facility. Yeah. And in here, they're caring for the people, making sure that they get the medicine they need. And I think, isn't this the part, or am I jumping ahead, where they didn't have the medicine for Emilio?
That's way
jumping ahead.
Okay,
yeah. Well, that's way ahead. Yeah. Then the next day, they're like doing the senior citizen recreation where they're just sitting in a circle, passing
calisthenics,
the ball.
Getting chair exercise.
But this one little old guy was funny because this happens all the time, actually, especially according to my mom, who's a nurse, which is not funny. But this elderly man, like, you know, he's listening to the woman instruct them how to pass the ball. He's like, I can't hear you. I can't hear you. Lean closer. So she goes to go tell him. He just grabs her boobs.
Right.
And he thinks, you know, he's so clever. And she's clearly, like, annoyed, but, like, she brushes it off.
Right.
And then as they're trying to pass the ball and beat their time, Emilio, he can't even remember what the word ball is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
he calls it he hears people call it an alab. I think he hears the people refer it to something else, and then he's like very confused.
And so I think throughout the book, it's just kind of showing, it's starting to get a little bit.
Yeah, as the story progresses, his dementia gets worse.
This is actually like a really sweet scene, and this will take. I'll talk about my grandmother. So, they're just in this building the whole time, okay? And they're kind of like going through their day, and that's kind of what it shows. It just shows like what the average day is, and it's not a lot. But there's this guy, and his wife is sitting with him, and Emilio asks like, "Hey, why is this other guy just like staring at this couple?"
And yeah, Miguel, it's like family visitor day.
Yeah, and Miguel explains, well. He's like, see that woman next to that guy? She thinks that's her husband. But really, the man watching her is her husband. And he loves her so much, he still comes every week and, like, has to put up with this.
She, like, doesn't recognize him at all.
Yeah.
Like, has no memory of them together.
Right. She only has present memories and where she met this new guy.
Yeah. And I think this is where Miguel kind of makes the point, like, I'm glad to be alone. And I never had anyone to love because
I never even owned a dog.
That scene really kind of broke my heart just because I can only imagine, you know, we usually see these kind of dementia type stories where it's just one guy like Emilio, right? And they're suffering and alone. Or maybe it's a couple where one is totally out of it, like the other couple we saw, and the other one's caretaking for them. But for this, where it's kind of, she's somewhat cognizant, so she has started this new romance, but the husband's right there. It's just, I can't even imagine being in his place. And he can't get mad. He understands the place that he's in. So he just hopes that, like, somehow maybe the smell of cologne will remind her of their connection. And he just looks at them longingly. It's like a personal hell.
But he still loves his wife. He still goes and makes sure she's okay.
And it's not like he tries to, like, disrupt them or anything like that. He understands how important it is for her, too.
So with the next dinner scene,
or like activity scene. I love this part.
The bingo one? Yeah. Okay, why don't you talk about bingo? And then because I meant to say something about the girl with the green sweater, but you talk about bingo and I'll talk.
Well, I was going to bring her up. Let's talk to her and then about her and then we'll go to
So a little bit ahead, because I skipped bingo. It shows them at dinner again. I meant to say the first dinner scene. You'll notice her, like, she very slyly starts pocketing things. During dinner, she'll pocket a thing of
random
butter.
Shit.
Yeah,
butter, ketchup.
Some ketchup. Packets, yeah. So she's kind of slowly, like, grabbing things. And at first, I wondered if there was, like, a food shortage, if they weren't really taking care of them. But that didn't seem to be the case.
All this generation that's in here, they probably were kids during World War II. So I thought, them being in Europe, because this takes place in Spain, I was thinking, they were probably kids during this war when everything was rationed or you just didn't even have food.
That's a good point.
But no, it'll come into play later. And this is the old lady with the green sweater who uses the walker. But yeah, after this is the bingo scene where there's a gentleman in there who pops up every once in a while. He's kind of like the comedic relief. And he just repeats what everybody else says. And there's this very Abbott and Costello scene about the bingo ball number 20 coming up where they just keep going back. Like the game never progresses because everyone's like, what? 20? 20? What? What did he say? 20? Yeah, it was 20. 20 what?
That was pretty funny.
It was really cute.
I also liked just before the couple scene, there was another scene with the lady with the green sweater that I liked that I found touching. Miguel is kind of a jerk and he basically has this kind of, I wouldn't say a rant, but he tells her, you know, our families want us to run errands and they want us around, but when we're not useful, they just basically leave us here.
Yeah, as elderly people, they want us around until
we're not useful.
Can't help.
Right, and then, you know, and that upsets, obviously, the green sweater lady, and she says, that's not true, my family loves me. You know, and that's something where I can't imagine, and I might have to cross that bridge, where you have to make that decision, where as a family member, you know, going back to what we talked about before, it's too emotionally taxing or financially taxing for you to be able to take care of them 24/7. So you have to put them in some kind of facility. But, you know, to your parent, your grandparent or what have you, they might feel abandoned. They might feel like, oh,
well,
now
and I think it was also like it was a character study of like pessimism versus optimism.
Right.
And I will say, too, you can tell throughout this book, this is a pretty good facility. There's no abuse.
Yes.
It's obviously privately owned. It's not some state-run thing. So those are not cheap. There is a huge financial burden to put your parent in there. And I think for some people, that is them caring for their parent because they are not the medical experts. They can't be there 24/7 to keep them safe, to make sure they don't turn on the stove and forget about it.
Well, it might also be a situation too where in Europe, there's much better social programs in place where you can still be in a good facility that's state run, or, you know, the state can assist you, you know, for a lot cheaper than we do in the States. So
I got to imagine that's the only way that Miguel was able, because he's not married. So you never had kids.
Well, he probably has a lot more money.
Well, that's the thing. So he probably, like, I want to be here because this is cheaper than living on my own.
Yeah.
They can give me my medicine and everything like that.
So there's a quick scene where, like, this one woman thinks there's aliens there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's showing how Miguel fucks with these people because he told them there was a parade and it's raining outside. So these five old people are out following each other in the rain because they think there's...
Well, one of them... This is where I don't like Miguel sometimes. That lady who wants to make a phone call and contact her family that he took the fee from, he said there's a phone outside.
Yeah.
So she's out there in the rain because she's looking for the phone. Mm-hmm. And then I forget what the other elderly individual next to her is doing, but he's following her for a reason. And then the alien lady doesn't like to be alone because she's afraid aliens will take her. So she's following them. So he manipulates the situation in some sort of like domino effect for his amusement.
Yeah.
So you guys will have to explain this scene to me because this is where I always get lost. So it's about Christmas time. They're decorating. Miguel's like, why are you even decorating?
Well, we skipped over a part where, sorry to interrupt, where Emilio's shaving.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah. And Miguel comes in and he's like, what are you doing? It's 3:00 in the morning. He's like, oh, I got to get ready for work. He's like, you're not. This is where their relationship, where Miguel starts to actually care and love, because he's like, no, you don't have to go to work. And let's just go back to bed, because they're roommates. That's the other thing. Yeah. Is they're roommates. And
Emilio in this scene, which I really liked, is he's young again.
Yeah, he thinks he's...
In the mirror, he's young.
Yeah. But it's Miguel now starts to become his caretaker.
Mm-hmm.
And shaves a little bit too. And
yeah, to make him feel better. Because he's like, okay, like we can all shave. It's no big deal.
Right.
We'll shave.
It's 3 a.m.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, and then it's just, there's like two whole pages. It's just, you just see the waiting room, you see the clock, you see people come in, sleep, slowly leave, come back in, sleep,
right.
And that's it. That's their life. So then they're getting ready for Christmas, and Miguel's like, oh, that's stupid to decorate, blah, blah, blah. But then Miguel has a dog, a puppy.
Well, he's got a dog, but it's because there's this other gentleman in the facility who he gets, it's like weekend leave.
Yeah.
He gets to go and visit his son. He gets to leave the facility.
Okay.
But so what he does when he goes out is he brings a puppy back with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he does this repeatedly, and you get the impression they're either taking the dogs from him,
right,
or the dog dies, because he winds up doing this a couple times throughout the story.
Right.
Somehow he's getting dogs.
Right.
In fact, he almost kills one in an elevator
at the very
later
end. Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that saved the dog's life was he didn't enter the elevator and the dog did. And the elevator goes down, and he thinks he's like, oh, crap, I'm about to kill this dog. I'm about to hang it. And it's one of those leashes that has the extendable run. So he unclicks it real quick, and then the dog doesn't get hung.
So this kind of demonstrates, again, Miguel really caring for Emilio. They're getting dressed, and Miguel's kind of like, hey, like, you know, you dressed for the circus? And he's like, what do you mean? He's like, well, most people don't put their sweater over their jacket.
Right.
And you can see.
And his sweater's inside out.
Yeah. And the tag. What's interesting here is you can see Emilio. He's not quite gone yet. Like, he understands the concept of getting dressed. He knows he has these like five pieces of clothes he has to wear. He's just getting the order kind of mixed up.
He still thinks he's getting ready for work. So he's like putting on a dress jacket, like he's going to business instead of, well, it's also a different generation where, like, you wear a button-up shirt, you wear slacks.
I think they were getting nicely dressed because it was visitor day.
Yes, and so they go out, and I think it's still Christmas. Everyone's there. Emilio's family's there. He seems very happy. The girl who thinks she's going to Istanbul, her family's there on the train with her. And then the little lady with the green sweater, she says, Grandma has something for you. And it's obviously, I think it's apparent it's her grandson. I mean, standing in front of her, Kai's young guy. And she goes into her purse and she just pulls out this handful of junk. It's like an apple, some pills,
paper clips.
Yeah, the ketchup box.
Honey packets from KFC.
Yeah. And she's like, I saved these all for you. The good olive oil, something from the casino. And the grandson's obviously, he looks kind of younger, maybe a teenager. He's like, Grandma, what do you want me to do with this? Like, what is this? And she's like, you know, hide it before they come. Yeah. And I thought this was really sad because she obviously, she's fluid enough. She knows who her family is. She knows that she loves them. She knows Christmas is coming. So she's trying to get him a gift right. in the way that she can.
Well, I think where they're at on the first floor is anybody that needs care. So I don't think she's has dementia. I think she just doesn't get around well.
Right.
Whereas like Miguel, same thing. He doesn't have dementia. He's just, he doesn't have anybody to take care of him. So he's in this facility. And that's the worrisome part about going up to the second floor is that's where you go when you don't have any mental capacity or you're physically so deteriorated you can't get around on your own. You need constant care. Whereas everybody on the first floor, they just need assisted. Yeah.
So then it cuts to the dinner scene. Do you want to talk about this one, Dennis? This is where the pill situation happens with Modesto and Emilio.
The hospital worker starts distributing pills. Doesn't he call it something else, like party favors?
Yeah, that's what he did. And it's very joyous right now. Like, they're all very happy. They're, like, eating dinner.
Right.
It's
so
a good time.
So he's like, here's your party favors, which is the pills. But then he doesn't have Emilio's. But then he slips up and says, well, you take the same pills as the other individual.
Some other woman, yeah.
The guy. Yeah.
Modesto.
Modesto.
I didn't remember his name.
Who has Alzheimer's already. So that's when it hits Emilio, like, oh my gosh, I didn't know I had this, which I'm surprised they hadn't talked to him before.
So then it cuts to the doctor mm-hmm. in the Santa hat, and he's asking, you know, like, hey, what, is it true? Do I really take the same pills as him? And the doctor takes off the hat and is like,
right.
Yeah, it's time to have this conversation. You have Alzheimer's, and there's no cure, essentially.
And he asks, well, what's going to happen? And he's like, right. You know, your mind's going to deteriorate. You'll start to lose your ability to talk, to recognize objects, be able to call them by name. Your capacities are going to diminish and you will die from this. And he's like, well, what? He's like, I'm 72 years old. It's okay. I have memory slip ups. Like, it's not a big deal at my age. Mm-hmm. This is expected. And, you know, the doctor is convincing him, like, no, this is going to be worse than that. This is much worse. And he's like, so what do I have? Like 5 to 8 years? He goes, yeah, it could be somewhere in there. It could be less.
Which I'm trying to think back to when I've had a similar conversation with a doctor. The only one I can recall somewhat is when they were talking to me about my dad and his cancer. I don't remember it being so bleak. I felt like the doctor was
fatal diagnosis?
Yeah, I don't know.
Or terminal, I should say.
I wasn't sure. Like, it felt really like a lot of information all at once, not very soft-handed.
Well, I think I feel the doctor was not sugarcoating it.
Right. He was almost too matter of fact for me, though, in some ways. I mean, that's a lot.
I would rather get the matter of fact. I don't need you saying.
I think, and I think for some doctor, I mean, there's the bedside manner.
Right.
I think for their safety, too, like to, you know, they have to just lay it out. This is what's happening.
There's no question.
Yeah. And I just saw a really good movie called The Farewell. Mm-hmm. And it's based on a true lie. That's the.
I wanted to see that film.
But it's basically this grandmother has cancer. It's terminal. The family doesn't want to tell her. And the granddaughter's conflicted because she feels she has the right to know. And the family's like, that's very selfish of you. It's not going to do her any good to know. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't sure if this was like a European thing where like, because in America, you are the only one who has your medical knowledge and a doctor cannot share anything without your consent.
Right.
So it sounds like he didn't really know what was going on when he came into this facility, but maybe
he may have forgotten.
Yeah. Or his children did. And so the doctor, I think, is doing his duty now to tell. He has to tell him. Yeah. Because he's asked. So I didn't think that it was heavy handed. There's no easy way to say that. Like, and there's no sugar coating it. It's there's no cure and this is what's going to happen. So he's really distressed, and he asks Miguel to take him up to the second floor. And Miguel's like, are you sure you want to do this? He's like, I want to see what that's like. And it's just a very sad scene. The people are at dinner, but it's just depressing. Everyone's like in
dark brown. It's very different from the other dinner.
It's chaotic. There's lots of stuff being yelled out. Now, when I briefly worked at a dementia ward when I I lived in Spokane, and it wasn't like that at all. It was very sedate. Most of the time, it was just people, one like severe dementia, just wandering around the hallways. They'd sit in a chair and get up and move to another spot. They did defecate and urinate in their pants, but it was not, it wasn't like this horror show.
I saw two old men fist fighting at the dinner table one time. Ooh. Like they just got like really, really upset. So I don't think it was the standard. I think it was the rarity.
Yeah.
That Miguel, after kind of this tour, Emilio says to Miguel, "I'm not going to end up there, Miguel. I'll do everything I can to not end up there." He says, "Will you help me?"
And this is where Miguel's grifting.
Right.
He starts like telling him, like, "You're just going to eat sandwiches," like when the caretakers come around.
He's having a hard time cutting food. So to hide it, he's like, "You guys just give him sandwiches. That's all he wants."
That's all he wants. He's
cutting it with the spoon. Right. He's really trying to cover up all of his mistakes.
Yeah, and like draws pictures on his clothes of like with little tags. This is a shoe.
Right.
He draws a photo of a shoe on or a picture of a shoe. Jacket, you know.
And he tries to keep him busy. He's like, "Let's go to the library, make some read." And he's like, "Oh,
because that keeps your mental capacity."
Yeah. So he's reading the book. He's like, "Oh, I've read like three books." And he's like, "Oh, what are you reading now?" And he tells him, and he's like, "Oh, what's it about?" He's like, "I don't remember." He just slams the book. He's like, "Reading stupid anyway. Let's go outside. Let's go for a walk."
And he's reading Love in the Time of Cholera, which I haven't read in a really long time. And he actually reads the passage. And I was trying to do some research on that to see if it relates to something in this, but I couldn't find a parallel.
I guess that's where I found the doctor's response cold. So he tells him this is what's going to happen to you, but there's no hope. There's no like, this is what you can do to slow things down. All this stuff that he's trying to do.
I think as a narrative, I think the doctor, it's really serving the purpose of telling the reader what's going on.
But I agree with you. Like it is very harsh, but it's also, there really is nothing. But this scene is beautiful to counter that. They're at dinner one night and Modesto, the couple, like he's just kind of being snotty and the wife leans over and just says one thing and all of a sudden he smiles.
Mm-hmm.
And the little lady in the green sweater, she's like, "You know, what do you say to him to make him smile?" And it shows this beautiful story of Miguel's a little boy.
Well, she says, "Nothing really, I say cheater."
Cheater, yeah. Thank you. And then you see what that means for him as a little boy. He runs into the girl and her friends and he gets the courage to say, "Hey, you know, will you be my girlfriend?" And she says, "You know, bring me a cloud and I'll be your girlfriend." So he finds this tower. He takes her up these stairs to the tower. There's a bell. And he like pulls her up and they're standing at the window and all of a sudden the clouds come and she has her arms out and they're literally being hit with the cloud through the tower. And then they smile and he leans in and calls him a cheater because he cheated by bringing her a cloud.
So is that implied that that little girl is his wife?
Yeah.
Okay, so they're longtime sweethearts.
Yeah.
And that's why she's so bonded to him and takes care of him.
And then, you know, it speaks to the whole dementia thing where, you know, you may not have new memories that you can remember, but you have some old memories that you can unlock. And that's an old memory that she's found a way to get to to make him happy. So
that's a very good point.
Miguel keeps running his grifts. I fucking love this.
Also,
he's like, "We'll write things down on your hand." So he's like,
the doctor has a test. He's going to test him.
And Miguel has stolen this test already.
Yeah, and he like writes things on his hand he can't quite see. So Miguel's like, "Oh, this lady, she's having..."
Yeah, he keeps running interference.
Right.
Like, I love it. I love how Miguel just keeps helping Emilio out.
But yeah, his grifting for good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think it shows again at the dinner, Modesto and his wife are no longer there. And they're like, "Hey, you know, like, where's Modesto?" And like, "Oh, he had to go up to the second floor." He's like, "Well, what about his wife? She didn't need to go." He's like, "Well, she wanted to go with him." And Miguel's like, "Why would anybody want to go up to the second floor?" And that just shows like how much she loves and dedication. And this is where I got so confused because I confuse easily. This is the car stealing scene.
Right.
How did he?
Well, so the lady in the green sweater with the walker, she lays into Miguel. Like you have no sense of like love or commitment or anything like that. And Miguel's like, "Yeah, I never even owned a dog. Like I didn't want kids or anything like that." And she's just like, "Yeah, she loves him. That's why she went up there. Like, don't discount what her sacrifice for going up there." So then Miguel, I think he hired one of the...
Using all his grifting money.
Paid some kid like that works at the hospital
right.
to like rent a car, cut the chain link fence that surrounds this facility, mm-hmm. like cut a hole. We're going to go out on the road. We want to have some fun. One, you know, this is where he's like full McMurphy.
For sure.
Where they steal the boat.
Well, yeah, exactly.
He like throws her walker out of the car because it doesn't work. But the thing is, Emilio's the only one who has a license. So they make this like
knew how to drive at all.
Yeah. So they make him drive.
So it's, yeah, Emilio, Miguel, and then the lady with the walker.
And before they even start driving, he's like, what do I do with this? And it's the key. So you can already tell this is not good.
None of them move very well. Like, at one point, the keys fall on the ground, and mm-hmm. all three of them can't pick them up. So the guy who helped them, this younger guy, picks the keys up. Right there, I would have been like, no, this isn't. Sorry, guys.
But, so they start speeding through, and then Miguel's like, hey, did you see that guy flashing his lights at you? Like,
because it's nighttime, and they don't have their lights.
Right.
And it's winter. It's still around Christmas time or just after Christmas. And they
have a convertible.
Miguel was like, hey, I want a red car. And it's a white car. And he's like, well, this is the best I could do. And it's a convertible. Miguel's like, yeah, living it up. We've got the top down. And the other two are like, I'm really cold. It's just three old people riding around in the middle of the night in the winter with the top down.
And then Miguel realizes that Emilio doesn't have the headlights on. Emilio's like, I'll go check. And all of a sudden.
Literally go check. It's assumed that he basically thinks, I'll go outside.
Yeah.
And check on the lights. And so they obviously get in a crash.
And then cuts like the doctor's like lecturing him, like, Miguel, like, what were you thinking?
Well, that's what I really like in this too is Emilio says, I'll go look. And then it just cuts to Miguel in the administrator's office
with a bandage on his head. And she's basically like, you pull any more stunts, you're going to get kicked out.
Yeah.
Like, this is not acceptable. He keeps thinking he has to go to work.
Yeah.
So then it flashes to the night. And this is really sad. It's just two pages, but. You see the orderly running down the hall. They're screaming. They're yelling. There's a commotion. I think this man is blind. He goes into the room. There's two roommates.
There's this blind gentleman who shares a room with another gentleman. Throughout the story, this blind gentleman keeps complaining about his roommate snoring.
Yeah. And then he has like this big wrench in his hand. He's like,
which Miguel had supplied him.
Yeah.
Oh, that part I didn't know.
Yeah. It was a page before. Oh, he said, hey, Miguel, can I get a wrench?
That's
one of those big ones that really can take down a big nut. And the orderly is the same one that messed up the medication.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So he's like, there's cracks in the wall. He's hitting beds. He's hitting lamps. And the orderly yells, like, stop, stand still. So the guy that's trying to run from the blind man stands still. And the orderly's like, no, not you. And sure enough, the blind man cracks him over the head with this big wrench. And you just see blood on the floor next to the feet.
The one who stood at attention, I think he's the one who believed he was still in the military.
Yeah. That's right. And he's kind of saluting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then it's just passed over. It's a new scene. And
now it's into the spring.
That's right. And that's when he has like all the tags and they're talking.
And it should be noted that throughout the book, Emilio believes that Miguel is stealing from him. Like, have you seen my wallet?
Have you seen my watch?
My socks.
And then given Miguel's kind of attitude and history, you kind of think he might be stealing stuff from Emilio.
So this is where Emilio's packing his suitcase and he's carrying it around.
Well, here's the thing. What happens is he asks, where are my black socks? And Miguel denies he has them. And so Emilio believes this is the last straw. You've been stealing from me. I've seen you
grift
people's money. So I'm packing up. I'm not going to be your roommate anymore. I think he's carrying his stuff so Miguel can't steal it. And two, he probably requests to switch rooms, which is why they clear the bed.
Well, as this next phase of the story goes on, Emilio's dementia is getting worse and worse and worse. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, Miguel's compassion is growing. He's like the Grinch where his heart grew three sizes.
He's like, dressing Emilio now. He's buying his shirt.
He's dressing him. That old lady who's always asking for the phone. At one point, she asks him asks Miguel for the phone. And you think he's going to – she pulls a piece of paper out and you think, oh, she's
taking the money
again. And it's the actual phone number. And he's got a little cell phone and makes a call for her. He gets a dog for that old guy who's always stealing.
And a long leash.
Dogs, yeah. And then it cuts to Miguel being in there in the room that he shares with Emilio and the bed is stripped. And I got the impression these two old guys thought they were running this this smoke and mirrors thing to keep Emilio down there. And I think it just, they realize from the car accident and his behavior, like, he needs to go upstairs.
Yeah, there's a scene where it's just Miguel and the old lady at dinner.
Yeah.
And he's kind of sad. And so then he sees the strip bed, but he sees a bump and he unveils the box. Mm-hmm. There's this metal box and he's holding it and he opens it and inside is the wallet. It's the black sock. Yeah. It's the watch.
So turns basically, out Emilio was hiding
things. Yeah, right. He was hiding things. So this really resonated with me because my grandfather did not trust my grandmother with money. Mm-hmm. And he hid money throughout the house. And my sister and I, before he got very sick, we would stay with him in the summer. We would go to Grandma and Grandpa's house. So Grandma went to work. My mom went to work. And we would just kind of babysit my grandfather. And Grandpa would go in his room. Or Grandpa would say, let's go to Winchell's. Because you could walk from my grandma's house. You could walk to this little, like, market street. And there was a Winchell's Donuts. And there's some other things. We're like, Grandpa, we can't walk to Winchell's. We don't have any money. He's like, hold on. He'd go out. He'd go into the room, close the door of the bedroom. So he'd come out with $200. And we would go walk to Winchell's.
And how old were you and your sister?
Oh, like 8. And my sister's like 12. And we went and bought donuts. We brought cake mix. We brought all this stuff. It was great. We loved watching Grandpa. But my grandmother tried to search the house to find the money, and she knew there was more there, and she could never find it, and she ended up selling the house. But he was such a good hider, and I think, like, so this part, I was like, that made so much sense to me. You're so scared, and you don't want to lose your valuables, right. But then you forget because you have dementia. Right. But yeah, that was a lighter moment to what's about to happen.
But I don't think he went to the second floor yet, because what ends up happening is that Miguel is taking care of him more, to the point where he's now taking care of him like the old lady and her husband, because they're still on the same floor because they're still eating together.
No, because the lady, I'm going to disagree, because the lady in the green sweater, where they all sat around, Miguel, Emilio, Modesto, all them, when it cuts to the dinner, it's just her by herself.
Yeah.
So Miguel's upstairs feeding him, and that's where this beautiful touching scene, I'm getting choked up just talking about it, is Miguel spoon feeding Emilio, and it's like his final cognizance is, and it's so beautifully drawn, like, you have to definitely pick up this comic book just for this panel alone,
right,
where he doesn't recognize Miguel's face, and it kind of comes into,
and the way they do it is it's just his head
blank,
but blank face,
yeah,
no features, no nose, no eyes, and then the eyes start kind of appearing, the mouth, and all of a sudden he recognizes it's Miguel.
And then it fades.
Yeah.
Then it fades back out again.
And I didn't get this till just now, as we're talking about it. Miguel made the choice to go upstairs to take care of him. Like, that's what I thought. I thought Emilio, he finally lost it. He had to go up to the second floor. And I thought, like, years passed and Miguel went up there. But no, reading this now, he went up there by choice to go take care of him. And that was like, and then they're sitting at the table and.
And then it just fades to white.
Well, he's starting to, so even though he recognizes him and he, like, all of a sudden he starts to not recognize him again.
Yeah.
It's fading. Whatever memory he had is starting to go.
Well, I think it's his cognizance. Like, it's gone now.
Once again, when you look back at, like, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, McMurphy just wants to escape the facility. Whereas in this case, McMurphy is staying.
McMurphy's, that's more of an analogy about, like, bureaucracy and like, the man.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this is just, you know, he's just a fucking little rapscallion.
Yeah, he finally experienced, like, what true love is.
Right,
like, he finally cared for somebody and I thought this was a beautiful.
And we got one more scene too.
Oh,
is the
two
little
more.
The little lady with the walker goes up to the woman who always thinks she's on the
train to Istanbul.
The train to Istanbul.
Oh, that's right.
And her final cognizance too happens, and then the third one is the old guy with the dog,
which really terrified me. Yeah. Like, I thought it was going to end on a really bad note.
So yeah, and then the author wraps it up with a little note about his experience with his family, experience with it, and just the transition from, like, well, now we're the adults and I could see my parents fading into now being the grandparents. It's a really beautiful story. Well done. This was Frankie's pick. Like, how'd you happen upon this?
So, great question. Johnny has an online account with the Sacramento Library. So I went to go search for a digital comic book. I just like, oh, because I knew we were going to record today. And I was like, oh, I need to go pick a book. So I just typed in comic book in the search. Mm-hmm. And then they had like an online option. So that's what I did. And I was kind of going through and I saw some that were kind of interesting. And then on the fifth page, I saw this one. And they all have like a little bit of a descriptor of what it is. And just because of my personal unfortunate experience with Alzheimer's, mm-hmm. I've never seen anybody write about it, especially like in a comic book. And I was like, this could be interesting. And I was curious to see, like, because the caption sounded kind of funny. It was kind of like, you know, this guy's like showing him the ropes and, you know, trying to keep him sane in the hospital. So I was like, oh, this, I want to see their portrayal of what Alzheimer's is. And I thought it was going to be more quirky and funny, like shenanigans that they got into, like,
more of the car scene.
Yeah. But I was pleasantly surprised. It wasn't what I initially expected, but I thought it was a very true portrayal to the point that it can't. I've never been in that situation. Just seeing what the drawing and the coloring alone was very much what it's like at a hospital, from a convalescent hospital, and what elderly people do there. There's not much to do. But that's how I found it. I found it online, and I'm so glad I did. I thought
that's a great story.
I thought it was a really good book.
Beautifully drawn. Beautifully drawn.
And I don't think you have to experience what it's like to be an Alzheimer's to appreciate it. I think it's about getting old, forming new families.
It's beautifully portrayed. All of a sudden, they're in this memory, and you think that's the reality, and then all of a sudden, they're snapped out of it, and they're in current time. It was done amazingly well.
And yeah, like I said before, I enjoyed how there's different portrayals of the different types. The husband who has to look at his wife, basically be with a different husband. Obviously, the people suffering from severe dementia. It's really touching. And to see Miguel's arc change from just, you know, being
the shithead. Just in here fucking around.
Right. To really caring, like we said, for the stranger is amazing.
I thought that was interesting. And again, not to get too deep. There's definitely the parent-child conflict. And I know Johnny and I have issues with our moms, if I can share. I mean, nothing, you know, egregious. But Dennis, I know like your father became sick and you did everything you could to help care for him. And you see this book like, oh, this is so sad. Like, how do people just put their family in a home? But then when I think about myself, like I would have no problem probably putting my mom in a home. Like and that's sad. Like, and not that I don't want her to be taken care of. I mean, obviously, like I would find her something nice or... But it's interesting, too, because you also have to wonder sometimes, like, why are they alone, right? Like,
right.
Did something else happen? Or is it really just, I am a truly selfish person who doesn't care about anybody, and I'm just willing to throw my mom in the home? So there's that, too. I think there's child guilt when you have to make those decisions.
Sure.
And what kind of home do you want to go into, Johnny?
Oh, Johnny's going to live it with me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're going to be roommates. I'm going to be Miguel. He'll be... Emilio.
It's going to be a full bosom buddy situation. We're going to have to...
We're going to live in a women's hotel, women's only hotel.
Yeah. And that's really not politically correct anymore.
Yeah, think about that. I thought this was beautifully done, beautifully illustrated, such a touching story. I really liked the direction it went.
Yeah.
I thought it was very respectful to the situation. I would highly recommend. Highly.
Yeah, this is really the reason why I like starting the podcast and everything. It's to get these nuggets of, you know, the illustration isn't like super detailed or anything, but it serves the purpose super well.
Oh, I thought it was beautifully illustrated. I think it's very detailed. They're like, just how the clouds, when they're up in that bell tower and the cloud moves through, is like very detailed, beautifully drawn.
But it conveys the message of the going in from lucid to, you know, dementia very well. The writing is super good. At first, I wasn't going to like Miguel, but I ended up really?
Yeah, at first you're like, you little shit.
Right.
He had like a used car salesman vibe to me.
Oh, definitely.
Like, ugh. But then I was like, oh, he's good people.
He's like Bill Murray. He's like Dr. Venkman.
But, you know, it's these human stories that are real that I enjoy reading about.
And this was turned into a movie. I was looking, when I was looking on the Sacramento Public Library thing, I was like, wait, this is a movie?
So, yeah, 2011, I think.
Yeah.
Is it like on Netflix? Amazon,
I don't know.
I wonder if it's
it.
A Spanish movie.
Yeah.
No, it's American.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. I can't remember who's in it, but yeah, it's available through the Sacramento Public Library.
Oh, good to know.
We can take a look at it.
Well,
where can people find us?
Where can people find find you, Frankie?
You can find me on Instagram at WordsInWaffles.
And Dennis, where can they follow Graphic Novel Explorers Club?
On Insta and Twitter at GN Explorers Club.
All right. I think that's it.
All right. Well, thank you, Explorers, for exploring this novel with us today. We look forward to something more upbeat next time.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Bye. This would be a very different graphic novel.
Yeah.
Invasion of Planet Wrinkles.